have one case set for oral argument today. Your panel today is Justice Elizabeth Kerr and Justice Wade Birdwell, and I'm Lee Gabriel. So I will ask the clerk to call our case for argument. Mr. Marish, you may proceed.
Thank you. I represent City of White Settlement as well as its Economic Development Corporation. My clients have filed a lawsuit in the District Court, Tarrant County, against four different defendants, two of which are Texas residents and two of which are residents of the state of Georgia. They filed a special appearance, which was granted by the district court, and we have taken that matter up on an interlocutory appeal. I think the key to this case is for this court to understand exactly what our claims are, what parties we are suing, and what the underlying facts are, because I believe that there has been a misapprehension of the nature of our claims by the defendants as well as by the district court. In this regard, let me explain who the parties are and what the underlying facts and circumstances that gave rise to litigation are. There is an entity that operates in the state of Texas, Horizon Family Holdings. That company operates seven different water parks in seven different Texas cities. Horizon Family Holdings formed seven different subsidiaries to operate each of these parks. The basic arrangement with respect to the parks and the cities is pretty much the same. The cities will own the park and the equipment in the park. They will enter into a long-term ground lease with the subsidiary of Horizon Family Holdings, who will operate the park. Now, Horizon Family Holdings began its business endeavors in 2005. During the course of their business operations, they borrowed quite heavily from Capital One Bank at Fort Worth. Capital One Bank took a first lien position on all their assets to support their loan. Now, Source Capital, which is one of the defendants we're interested in today, is also in the lending business. The manager of Source Capital is Mr. Ben Emmons, who is also a party to this appeal. Source Capital operates essentially as a mortgage servicer. It finds lending opportunities for various private money sources, and they service the debt. Now, Source Capital came in and lent money to Horizon Family Holdings in 2013. They were
Did they lend the money, or did they facilitate the lending of the money by the lenders?
They facilitated.
Okay, explain how that happened.
Well, Source Capital operates as the lenders are private persons who are passive lenders.
Right.
They need somebody to find lending opportunities and to service the debt on behalf of the private lenders. And that's the role.
So Source Capital is effectively the agent of those lenders with regard to the investment itself, in other words, placing the money in the investment and managing that money in terms of its repayment and any profits that may be taken based upon that investment.
That's correct.
And then they transfer it back to the lenders pursuant to whatever agreement they have with those lenders. Okay.
Mr. Emmons is on both sides of that relationship. He is a owner and lends some of his money as well as other wealthy individuals. Now,
what's the relationship between Source Capital and Horizon Family Holdings, if any?
Other than acting as an agent with respect to the loan made to Horizon Family, they did have a business relationship, but not a contractual relationship.
Okay, so Horizon Family is not an affiliate of Source Capital. Horizon Family is a point of investment for Source Capital and Source Capital's lenders. Okay.
And there's no written contract between Horizon and Source Capital?
There is not. During the last quarter of 2014, this is about a year after the Source Capital $3.5 million loan to Horizon Family Holdings, they went into default. The Horizon Family Holdings goes into default on the loan to Capital One, the first lien holder, going to default on the loan to the Source Capital lenders, as well as on the ground leases to the seven cities. This created a major problem for Source Capital because their loan was at risk. Since the first lien was in default, if Bank One forecloses on the assets of Horizon Family, they will lose their loan. They will have no ability to collect their loan, so they perceive substantial economic risk.
Let me make another point of clarification, okay? So the $3.5 million that is obtained from the lenders by Source Capital is infused into Horizon, not into Hawaiian. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Horizon then takes that money and infuses it into the various Hawaiian entities for the seven parks.
Yes. Now, specifically, this is a detail.
And it's the same thing with regard to the Capital One loans. Those loans were to Horizon, but the entities that were created by Horizon to actually effectuate the operation and management of the parks were not actual parties to any of the lending transactions that we're dealing with.
You're correct. Horizon acts as a parent company. It's got these seven subsidiaries, which are all operating water parks. The lending, the money from the lenders flows through the parent company to the subsidiary.
Yep. Are you relying in any way on the defendant's contacts with Texas with regard to the other six cities, or are you purely looking at what was discussed with White Settlement and the meeting and that sort of thing?
Well, the facts show that Mr. Emmons and Source Capital had contact not just with White Settlement, but with the other cities as well. Now, the most critical point of analysis in these jurisdictional cases is, was the contact by the defendants purposeful? And I believe that it does give some weight to the purposeful argument to see that not only did our defendants here have contact with White Settlement and its city manager and its chief financial officer, but they had contact with Bank One in Fort Worth, and they had contact with Horizon. So there's a broad range of contacts. Now, we're obligated to prove that some of those contacts, especially those that arise or connected with our causes of action, we've got the burden to show that, yes, they contacted us, there's purposeful involvement with us, but the fact that they were also involved with these other cities does indicate that they knew and purposefully that they were going to be doing business in Texas on a broad basis.
Were any of the other Hawaiian entities in default?
Yes.
Okay, so it wasn't just the White Settlement Hawaiian entity?
No, it was a system-wide meltdown that was occurring in late 2014.
Okay.
You disagree that you have to prove purposeful availment on a claim-by-claim basis, correct?
Yes.
And what is your best case to support that?
Well, during the, I think the best evidence of that, and I would refer the court to a Fort Worth Court of Appeals case, which we cite, Glencoe Capital Partners versus Gernsbacher. In that case, out-of-state persons initiated contact with Texas residents in order to sell them some financial instruments. The Fort Worth court in that case viewed that as being a very important activity, and that's what happened here. The city of White Settlement had no business connection with Mr. Emmons or with Source Capital at all. They called us. They initiated the contact with us in December of 2014. There ensued over the next 6 months numerous telephonic communications and emails, but also three face-to-face meetings, all of which were in the city of White Settlement. They came in order to induce our city to cooperate in a financial reorganization of the debt of Horizon.
Now, the workout agreement, was Source Capital an actual, or Mr. Emmons, but Source Capital an actual party to, or does the workout agreement actually exist? And on what basis do you say it exists? Because they're saying it doesn't.
Well, it does. There is an agreement between, was it inter-lender agreement between Bank One on the one hand and Source Capital on the other. What Source Capital wanted Bank One to do was forbear foreclosing on their loan, give them a year, which they agreed to do. Bank One agreed to not default that debt until the end of 2015.
Is there something in writing that reflects that? Because it seems like the record evidence that you're pointing us to for the workout agreement, which in my mind would be an actual signed contract of some sort, is just this March 31st letter from Source Capital to White Settlement. Is that?
That's reflective of a separate agreement between White Settlement and Source Capital directly. But that
was not reduced to writing other than in the letter memorializing what agreements were allegedly made during the one meeting that was had here.
Yes, there was a meeting in the city manager's office in White Settlement, and certain representations and promises were made by Mr. Emmons on behalf of Source Capital that we will do certain things. Most importantly, provide a substantial amount of money, over $1 million, to us via four payments. They made three, but didn't make the last one. So, but that letter you refer to was requested by the CFO of the city to say, we want you to memorialize what you're telling us here so that we will have it in writing and we can rely on it. And so you ask, well, what's our most important evidence? The fact that they, Mr. Emmons and Source, initiated the contact with us, and they continued in contact with us for a period of 6 months. So, and the purpose was to induce the city, our city, White Settlement, to cooperate in this financial reorganization with Capital One. They did that. And another important point is, what is the benefit that Mr. Emmons and Source Capital got out of this arrangement? They have a very strong financial incentive to do this, because if they can't get this worked out with Bank One, they're going to lose their loan. They had $3.5 million loaned into Horizon, which was going to be lost if they couldn't get this deal worked out. So they had, they initiated the relationship with us. They made specific promises to us, which are memorialized in writing. These promises were made in Texas, on the ground, and are very material promises. The performance was to be conducted of this arrangement that they worked out. I'm talking about Secure One and White Settlement. The performance was going to be in Texas. They're going to give us money. They formed a subsidiary. Secure One formed a subsidiary, Source Horizon, that will take over ownership of Horizon, which I think is another very material fact. Source Horizon continues today to operate at least some of the water parks. Some of them have gone out of business. So,
Mr. Maris, your time is up. So you'll have some additional time at the end. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Hamilton?
May it please the court. I'm Spencer Hamilton on behalf of Appalese, Benjamin Emmons, and Source Capital. We're here today asking that this court affirm the trial court ruling sustaining the special appearance and dismissing Emmons and Source Capital from this case. Just from the start, I want to point out that we had a full factual record here. We had jurisdictional discovery for months. Mr. Emmons was deposed last March, and the trial court did not issue findings of fact and conclusions of law, so those facts necessary and supported by the evidence would be implied here. This is the exact type of case that the minimum contacts requirements are in place for. We have Emmons and Source Capital who are not Texas residents. They are not parties to the operating agreement that governs in this case. And on the other hand, we have Hawaiian Parks.
Were their activities in Texas indifferent to the contracts that are made that you're talking about there? In other words, it looks to me the record fairly clearly demonstrates that representations were made to obtain a forbearance in Texas with regard to activities in Texas to preserve an investment that had already previously been made, and those representations were to include the infusion of additional funds that were to be spent in Texas to protect the investment that had already been made. So how is that not purposeful availment? Okay, not only directed to Texas or at Texas, but in Texas. Where's the separation level where those funds were not expected to be used and spent in Texas to preserve the equity position of the Source Capital lenders?
So in that March 23rd, 2015 meeting, which we argue is the only contact of relevance here, the only contact that would give rise to the claim, Emmons was there in an effort to stabilize Horizon Family Holdings. So Horizon Family Holdings was obviously the borrower, as you pointed out, and the affiliate funds, the mezzanine funds of Source Capital Mezzanine Fund 1, the Co-Investment Fund 2, and the Gregson Trust were the ultimate lenders in that transaction.
They were the original $3.5 million lenders, correct?
Exactly.
Okay. So they had an equity interest in Horizon, expecting, and that equity interest was expecting to be repaid out of the operations of the seven parks in Texas once they were constructed and operating. Is that not correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So there's those lenders through Source Capital had an equity interest in real property in Texas vis-a-vis the operation and expected an income from that. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And they were going to lose it if Capital One foreclosed on their primary lien because Horizon had messed it up and wasn't going to be able to pay and their affiliates weren't going to be able to comply with the lease.
Correct. There absolutely was an interest in making this water park work in order to recoup those subordinate loans. But at the same time, Emmons and Source Capital were removed from the transaction. The way the transaction was structured, Emmons and Source Capital weren't parties to the consents that were subsequently entered into in 2015.
Would those consents have been entered into by the city without the efforts and representations made specifically by Emmons and Source Capital with regard to the infusion of additional funds?
Emmons and Source Capital represented that up to a certain amount of money would be infused, in that is memorialized to a certain degree in that March 31st letter you mentioned. However, the rest of those...
And in fact, $3.7 million was in fact infused and was used to pay past obligations by the White Settlement Hawaiian Parks Entity, correct?
Yes, but that money was coming from the affiliate lenders, the funds, not from Source Capital. At a minimum, Benjamin Emmons should not be, his contacts should not be imputed here under the fiduciary shield doctrine, because he didn't do anything outside of his corporate capacity at Source Capital, and you know nothing that he did.
So Source Capital brings the original $3.5 million investment to the lenders, effectuates it, manages it, collects on it where it can, initiates a discussion concerning a workaround to preserve that equity investment for those three lenders, and then you literally are saying they have absolutely nothing to do, that somehow it's now an independent relationship between the lenders and Horizon?
I'm not trying to say that it's an independent relationship. I'm just trying to say that their contacts didn't give rise to the claims. Emmons and Source Capital's specific contacts in the March meeting did not give rise to the claims. The misrepresentations are not outside of the operating agreement and the subsequent and the pre-existing obligations that Hawaiian Parks already had.
Okay, so you make a point in your brief that the obligation was not to pay $5 million, for example. It was to pay up to $5 million. And you acknowledged in the brief that 3.7 was, in fact, as a result of whatever arrangements were made, was, in fact, infused, and obligations that were actually in default were made good using those funds, okay? The key incident of the subsequent default was the failure to pay the October lease payment of $600,000, okay? Would you not agree that $1.3 million left in the $5 million up to would have been sufficient to pay the $600,000 October payment?
I would agree that it would be sufficient, but the $600,000 payment that was due in October 2015 was a pre-existing Hawaiian Parks obligation. Now, Source Capital is stepping in an effort to, you know, stabilize Horizon Family Holdings, and in order to do so, they, you know, indicated that the goal was to make that payment, but that payment...
And it was to stabilize it through the end of 2015. Would not October 2015 have been before the end of 2015?
Yes.
And couldn't that have been a misrepresentation that the city relied upon, that payment would be made?
I don't think that was a misrepresentation, because I think that that $600,000 payment is still governed by the operating agreement. It's still Hawaiian Parks' obligation. There's no benefit to Source Capital or Benjamin Emmons outside of that. They didn't benefit or profit from any of their interactions in Texas.
Well, although I'm sitting here looking at this March 31st letter, and the very last sentence on the first page says, I mean, this is Mr. Emmons' representation to White Settlement, the remaining 2015 payment, $600,000, will be made as required in October of 2015. That you don't think that that's an affirmative representation that White Settlement was going to get that money?
There absolutely was a representation that White Settlement was going to get that money, but that money was presumed to be coming from Hawaiian Parks after the infusion of capital.
So the passive voice construction in that sentence... I agree. It doesn't say Source Capital is going to make this payment or who exactly is going to make the payment. It says it will be made. But so you're saying that it was supposed to have been made not by...
Yes, exactly. Okay.
But the reason you held the meeting is because Hawaiian Parks White Settlement didn't have the money to make that payment.
Correct. Benjamin Emmons traveled solely for the purpose of stabilizing things. The effort was obviously there to try to recoup funds from the mezzanine funds loan that was made back in 2013. But at the same time, everything is still governed by this operating agreement. Hawaiian Parks, this really is a breach of contract case with Hawaiian Parks and appellants. Benjamin Emmons and Source Capital, through their actions, have not benefited or profited from Texas laws. They haven't taken any of the steps necessary to hit the purposeful availment, and ultimately that comes down to...
So the infusion of $3.7 million into Horizon was out of the goodness of the heart of Source Capital?
No, absolutely not.
It was absolutely an act of charity?
I'm not arguing that.
There was no benefit to Source Capital or its lenders that it was managing their investment?
There certainly was a hope that this would result in a benefit. Yes,
I mean, Capital One didn't call up Source Capital and go, hey, you guys have got a secondary lien here. We'd like to take care of your secondary lien, did they?
Not to my knowledge, but
okay.
at the same time, Capital One was the one pushing for the consent to the mortgage of leasehold. That was not a Emmons and Source Capital sought after objective. That was a benefit to Capital One that did nothing for Emmons and Source Capital. And
other than create in a position, Capital One in a position of forbear on foreclosing.
That's correct.
I have two questions. Do you agree that Source Capital called White Settlement?
I do not know. I do not recall when the initial contact was made. I don't recall, but I'm happy to submit supplemental briefing on that point.
Well, if you find it to be anything other than what Mr. Maris said, which his representation was that Source Capital called White Settlement, then I think that would be a good idea. But if you find that to be true, it's not necessary. The second question is, if Mr. Emmons came to Texas as both a representative of Source Capital and as an investor, how is the fiduciary shield doctrine applicable?
The fiduciary shield doctrine is applicable because Emmons was in his role as a corporate officer. There was no, I don't believe that the record has evidence of him benefiting as an investor outside of that partnership with Source Capital.
Was he not some type of principal of one of the three lenders?
I believe he was a principal of one of the mezzanine funds. I believe that to be the case, yes. But at the same time, at a minimum to the theft and conversion claims, those are clearly torts outside of the context of that meeting. There's no evidence that Emmons directed those torts, and even if he did, it's clear that would be the type of directed a tort at the jurisdiction that has been kind of foreclosed on by cases like Michiana. And while we still believe that those are based in tort, you know, there's no evidence that Emmons did anything beyond send emails from Georgia as to those arcade games and that equipment. So in conclusion, I would ask that this court consider the fact that this really is subject to the operating agreement. This really is a breach of contract case at its core between Hawaiian Parks and appellants. Source Capital and Benjamin Emmons structured the transactions in an intentional way to avoid coming into the laws and seeking the protections of the state of Texas.
Thank you. Mr. Maris? Mr. Maris, what is your contract that you're relying upon in your breach of contract claim against Mr. Emmons and Source Capital?
Well, if the contract that was formed is outlined in the March 23, 2015 letter. The terms of that agreement were that White Settlement would forbear on defaulting on the, creating a default on the lease. They would allow, even though we hadn't been paid our rent, that we would allow the new entity formed by Secure One to take ownership of Horizon.
But the forbearance was not going to be aimed at Source Capital. The forbearance was going to be aimed at Hawaiian Parks White Settlement. So what we're dealing with are representations about an existing contract and rights under an existing contract, okay? And the forbearance with regard to an existing contract that Source Capital is not a party to, but Source Capital has made certain representations based upon your allegations about funds being available for the one of the contracting parties, i.e. Hawaiian Parks through Horizon, and that infusion would go to a Missouri corporation, okay, that would then infuse it into Texas. So how is that a contract as opposed to the fraudulent inducement and or fraudulent representation, a separate tort?
There is a direct benefit to Secure One and its lenders to keep the leases, including our lease, performing. If that was not going to happen, Bank One was going to default Horizon on the loan and foreclose. So in order to secure their position, in order for Secure One to preserve their position, their $3.5 million, they had to keep our loan, or rather our lease, performing.
Yeah, Mr. Mears, I see where you're coming from as far as the representations and that sort of thing, but I'm really struggling with the idea that there was a breach of contract simply because, as I read this March 31st letter, I mean, it sounds like an agreement to agree. I mean, it's full of, you know, this is our plan going forward, look forward to working with you to get this completed. I'm really struggling with how this letter constitutes a contract that could have been breached.
Well, it in and of itself may not be a contract, but it's evidence that there was an agreement, and there was partial performance of this agreement. That letter of which you speak required three payments of $191,000 each. Those payments were all made to us. They shipped the money to us in Texas. They promised to make a fourth payment, the $600 payment, which they didn't do. We also provided the
consent. But in each of those instances, it was Horizon and or Hawaiian who made the payments. Those weren't direct payments from Source Capital.
Yes, they were.
They were direct payments from Source Capital.
They were infusing. Horizon didn't have any money. They couldn't keep the operation going. There had to be an infusion. That's the whole thing about the $5 million that
And I understand that. Part of what they're arguing, though, okay, is that the fiduciary immunity doctrine that they're talking about, okay, applies if, in fact, there exists a contract. If this isn't a contract, then the fiduciary doctrine they're talking about in terms of immunity wouldn't apply. That representations were made, you allege them to be fraudulent, you have no remedy by contract. It would seem to me that you would be arguing that there isn't actual a contract there to avoid that issue, at least with regard to Mr. Emmons.
Well, I believe there was a contract, and Fiduciary Shield would shield Emmons in the
event. I kept forgetting the word shield, sorry.
But we have alternative theories of recovery. If the trier of fact were to say there's no contract, then we believe there was a fraud. Now, these are alternative pleadings, and if there's a fraud, Emmons made the representation.
One real quick question. What evidence is there that Emmons is the one who exercised control over the equipment?
Well, his deposition, I have I deposed him and asked him about this.
And this is part of the record?
Yes.
And he specifically made a statement, if I may, made a specific statement that he was responsible for the sale of that equipment.
It's not. He was clearly involved. I don't want to overplay my hand here. He clearly was aware of it. He worked with a local guy, Clint Hill, to take the equipment. So Fiduciary Shield does not cover intentional torts. We've
okay.
alleged fraud. We've alleged conversion. I'd point out to the court that, you know, in this kind of context, if there's a scintilla of evidence to support our claims, the court, at this point in time, the court should accept that. We believe there's a whole lot more than a scintilla with respect to the conversion issue.
Okay.
If the court reads the deposition.
Any other questions?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. We appreciate your argument. Your case is submitted.